What's this podcasting thing all about? You boys are nerds. How come you can't have those keg parties and chase girls like other nice boys do?
Live from the place where we fix your money and maybe the occasional heating and cooling unit, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. Everyone, it's Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and while this little show keeps humming along, I wish I could say the same thing for the air conditioner. Ever since our problem last month with it, that thing's been making more noise than mom half an hour after she cuddles up with a good plate of barbecue and baked beans. But never fear, Doug is here to fix everything and make this show go all the way to 11. Today, we gladly welcome the hosts of the hit podcast, Paychecks and Balances, Rich and Bim. Also, some hot headlines, your letters, a Quotacy hotline call about withdrawing money from a Roth retirement plan, and my incredible trivia. And here they are, two guys who can't use tools, but some say are tools, Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
I'm not sure I like that.
Yeah, I'm not a tool.
Come on, Doug. Just fix the air conditioner and we'll be good. Hey, everybody. I'm Joe Salci. I average Joe Money on Twitter. Welcome to another show, OG.
It is another fantastic day.
It is, isn't it? We're here in the basement. I get to sit across the rickety card table from you and we get to talk about money.
In the heat. Again.
The heat
and humidity.
The heat of the moment. But you know what takes away?
The heat of the moment.
You know, it takes
better than the heat of the night talking about money with you.
A little uncomfortable there, but you know what won't make you uncomfortable? Heading to stackingbenjamins.com/magnify money, because when you go to magnify money, you know what you find? The average person has the wrong checking account, savings account, and debt products, and when they head to magnify money in complete anonymity, you can look for much better products than you have yourself. We shop for everything, don't we? Why don't we shop for those tools that help us buy everything? stackingbenjamins.com/magnify money. And when you go to Magnify Money, here's what you find out, OG. You find out that SoFi, spelled S-O-F-I, is number one when it comes to marketplace lending. What does that mean? It means that if you're somebody looking for a mortgage, for a personal loan, or for a student loan, head to stackingbenjamins.com/SoFi. That not only tells them that we sent you, here's what else it does. Because we sent you, if it's for a personal loan or a student loan, they can't do it for mortgages. That's against the rules. But for those two, you'll get $100. stackingbenjamins.com/SOFI. By the way, they don't just give you $100 for going. You obviously have to use them.
Yeah, you got to do some business.
That's right, if you do business with them. Speaking of business, we're doing business with the Paychecks and Balances podcast, guys. Wim paid down $30,000 in debt, and it's an exciting story, OG. I can't wait to have them tell
us. I like these success stories.
I really do.
We talk, sometimes we get some headlines of some unsuccess stories.
These guys not only have a success story about debt, but they also have a success story just about their podcast. I mean, their podcast is just taking off. So glad Rich and Wim coming down to the basement. But first, we've got some headlines, both of them covering some familiar territory. So let's do this.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's headlines.
Our friends who like Bitcoin are going to roll their eyes again, OG. Because Bitfinex exchange customers get a 36% haircut and a debt token, is this headline by Claire Baldwin from Reuters. Cryptocurrency exchange Bitfinex. Ever heard of Bitfinex?
No.
Neither have I. But they lost $72 million in blockchain currency, Bitcoin-y kind of currency. And you know how they lost $72 million?
They lost a hard drive?
It got hacked. Unbelievable if something bad would go wrong with a Bitcoin.
Yeah, I just read the article the other day about the hackers who stole money from the New York Fed, from the bank, like the foreign account of the Malaysian government. Do you remember that a couple of years ago, or a couple of months ago?
Yes, yeah.
They stole like $40 million.
Yeah.
If they can steal money out of the New York Fed, trust me, the stuff that's on your MacBook is already gone.
cryptocurrency exchange Bitfinex lost $72 million to hackers a couple weeks ago, told customers last Sunday they'd lose over 36% of the assets they had on the platform, but would be compensated for these losses with tokens of credit.
Oh, yes.
I'm sorry, I don't have $72 million, but I have a token of credit.
Yes, here is an apology card. Right. Our condolences.
A token of what kind of a moron are you to put all your money on this spot?
How about the good news is that while your portfolio is down 36%, we took another 22% to send you all flowers and Omaha steak packages.
I love how they make this sound on their website. They make this sound so professional. But Finex said on its website early last Sunday, they said, "This is the closest approximation to what would happen in a liquidation context. Upon logging into the platform, customers will see they've experienced a generalized loss percentage of 36.067%.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Hey, dude, you lost a third of your money. Bam! That just happened.
But you have a token. But we gave you 10.8 trillion tokens. That's like Farmville money.
Right.
You can use it at all places like Clash of Clans, Farmville.
Do you know how many trees
Candy
you could
crush?
You know how many trees you can buy for your orchard with that money? With that pretend money?
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, that's good.
What do you want to grow strawberries?
All right. I'll quit picking on your Bitcoin people. I'm going to get 15 more emails about why do I keep picking on Bitcoin.
Here, I'm going to jump on Bitcoin real fast. I saw an article this morning, which you probably haven't seen yet, that was another NFL player suing their advisor. This is Darren McFadden. I don't know if you saw this article or not this morning yet.
No, but our other headline is about a football player, but go ahead.
Yeah. So anyway, Darren McFadden suing his advisor for fraud and all this other sort of stuff. He invested $4 million in a Bitcoin startup company, and that's gone. And what caught me as kind of interesting was that this guy decided, the quote-unquote financial advisor, the way he got caught was because he tried to sell Darren McFadden a building that Darren McFadden owned already, that Darren McFadden bought with Darren McFadden's money. But the dude tried to pass it off as his building.
He wouldn't buy it again?
Yeah.
I can't believe he wouldn't buy his own building again.
Turns out that guy's gone missing, the financial advisor.
Oh, that's weird. Why would that happen? Let's talk about another financial advisor here. Yeah, this comes just from Investment News. Liz Skinner writes this one. Liz Skinner has been on this show so many times. That's right. Former Eagles player.
28 years that show's been on.
Former Eagles player defrauds football coaches, others out of $6 million.
Yes.
Securities Exchange Commission complaint alleges Merrill Robinson Jr. and partners promised 20% and took client funds.
Obviously.
This is the part that always gets me. If somebody looks you in the eye and says you're going to get 20%, I don't feel as bad for the people on the other end of that scam as I should.
Well, it kind of makes me think that I should change my marketing approach. And like talking about safe, prudent investment returns just really doesn't cut it anymore these days. So I should make a mountain chart out of, just go on Excel and just draw a chart and go, this is what your money will do. 20% a year guaranteed.
Can't lose.
No muss, no fuss.
It's going to be great. Former Philadelphia
Eagles.
But
wait, there's more if you act today.
Linebacker Merrill Robinson Jr. defrauded his former coaches and other investors out of about $6 million. Securities Exchange Commission alleged in a complaint filed last week, Mr. Robertson, Sherman Vaughn Jr., and the company they owned together called Cavalier Union Investments. It was a Cavalier Union, maybe a little too cavalier because they got caught. Raised more than $10 million from investors who were told their money would go toward diversified holdings. Yeah, some in the right pocket and some in the left pocket, right?
Yeah.
I shouldn't say that because this is all alleged, obviously, right now.
Yes.
I shouldn't, yes. We don't know if Mr. Robertson did anything wrong, but 20%. And the money's not there? Could be. So our lessons today are big ones, boys and girls. Bitcoin.
Good luck with that.
How's that working for you? To do my little Dr. Phil. And then number two, football player offers you 20%. Might not be legitimate. These two guys, Rich and Wim, standing at the top of the steps talking to mom, getting ready to come down to the basement. OG. These guys have a new hit podcast. I think they're about 35 episodes in, called Paychecks and Balances.
Cool name.
It is a great name. Two guys, normal guys, much more normal than you and me, probably not working out of somebody's basement. These guys have a fantastic show. Wim, which is not his real name. Isn't that weird? Rich is his real name. Wim, not his real name. Wim paid off $30,000 in debt.
Nice.
Yeah, we're about to find out how. Yeah, let's welcome Rich and Wim from Paychecks and Balances down to the basement. And I welcome the Paychecks and Balances guys to the basement. Rich and Wim, welcome, man.
Appreciate What's it, going Rich. On, Joe?
I'm so happy you guys are here because you guys have a way. If we had as fun a show as you have, we'd just burn ours and become you.
I mean, you guys are pretty fun.
Yeah, that's very flattering. Like we kind of saying in the black box discussions, as we call them. Right. I don't know that I'm funny. I just kind of learned over the years, just be yourself. And usually my funniest moments is me, like, just trying to tell a very serious story. And then people are later like, oh, that was really hilarious when you buried yourself in debt. And I was like, that was the most painful moment of my life. Right, but I appreciate that.
It wasn't that funny at the time.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you just be natural, I guess.
Well, that's funny. Yeah. And Rich, it seems like you guys are just pretty much entertaining yourself and bringing us along for the ride.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's two guys talking about work and money, you know, topics that aren't traditionally hot, as you guys have probably found out too. And, you know, you try to talk to some people about this stuff. And it's just us having a conversation, leveraging our experience and having a good time. Sometimes we may be drinking things, but we don't talk about that.
You don't talk about what you're drinking.
Yeah, I mean, it varies to me. Well, usually it's not anything fancy. It's like water or a Monster energy drink. But every now and then I feel aggressive, you know, may have a tall 22 of some exquisite beer beverage.
Usually for me, it's an arc. So I start off with like some sweet tea, which, you know, I take it to the next level with some honey, you know, so I got some chamomile and things of that nature. And I'm usually exhausted when the show starts. And then there's like a natural energy that occurs somewhere in the middle. And then I don't know usually where I end, like I'm up for another hour or so when we record in the evenings and things like that. But then, you know, I bring it right back down because I'm on the wrong side of 30.
Well, I'm on the wrong side of 40. So I think I got you beat, Wim. I thought about all the Paychecks and Balances stories out there. I think the one that I really want to highlight first for people that don't know anything about your show, Wim, is you and $30,000 of debt. So let's start with this. How did you get into debt?
Very irresponsibly, I guess, in the way you eat an elephant. What is it, like one bite at a time? So I honestly, and I think that's part of the story, I don't even know how it started. It's like you wake up one day just buried in debt, and you're like, where did it all go wrong? It's like a blackout like experience, and it's like Sixth Sense, and Bruce Willis is like, you're a ghost or whatever. I hope I didn't just do a spoiler alert, but that movie's been out for a while then, yeah. Folks.
If somebody needs a spoiler alert on that movie, they need to get out more.
You know someone's going to write in upset, like, I was going to watch that this weekend. That's so, right. That's right. There's always somebody upset, right. So I apologize. I offer a sincere apology. When I graduated college, and you'll see a theme here if we get into it. When I graduated college, it was probably about $15,000 in debt. You would think I would have been like ready to go. And I kind of like typical American. I'm like, all right, I got a college degree. I'm about to go out here and make it rain and get Benjamins. And, you know, I'm pulling the $600,000 a year. So I'm just hire me. And my first job, very humbling, out of college, I made $19,000. This is when, like, all the stories are, of course, coming out that business majors all make $50,000 a year. And I'm like, nah, I think something went askew. So I think to cope with that reality, coupled with a relationship, I was like, I know what I need to do. Put myself further in debt. So I got into a significantly serious relationship, as you can be at 23 anyway. And then I got to about $25,000. And you would think by then, based on all that I learned, and I don't even think I was making $25,000 a year at this point, that would be the breaking point. Like, okay, now he's finally learned his lesson. Wrong. So then I moved to a much larger city, which I've actually returned to now, which is Austin, Texas. Shout out to the ATX.
All right.
And I still increased my debt load until I finally about maxed out at about $30,000. And the breaking point wasn't even self-imposed. It was I had consolidated a few loans over the years, and I reached out to a yet unnamed banking institution, which I don't think I'll say because I'm not sure if they'll sue me. And I was essentially at that point that I think some people have reached, and I definitely did reach, where I had already done the shell game where I was using checks. And at least you could do this back in the day. I would mail a check, post-date it, and hope I'd mail it on like Friday and hope that they wouldn't deposit it until Monday or Tuesday because I got paid on Friday. But at 4 p.m., like I'm playing these shell games. I was paying credit cards off with other credit cards. Like, and I had gotten to a point where I couldn't even make my minimum payments. And I got an offer in the mail for a consolidated loan. And it's, of course, you've been pre-approved, you know, where you read it in the really triple-sized font, and then you hear your voiceover of choice, like, oh, already pre-approved. And I was like, oh, man, all I got to do is just call. And, like, it was the worst, like I said, that worst experience in my life part that everybody thinks is hilarious. And I called probably a gentleman at that point, maybe half my age, basically a telemarketer, and he ran me through the ropes because I knew nothing about my credit history. I didn't know my credit report. I didn't even know what my minimum payments were. I just knew I couldn't make them. And I realized during that phone call, when at one point he placed me on hold, that I was completely dependent on him saying yes. I remember he came back with a number that, of course, wasn't the pre-approved number. It never is. And he's like, you know, here's the number we can do, sir, for this percent. I'm like, well, that's not what it said on the pre-approved envelope. And I hear him like punching keys in the background. And he's like, well, according to our records, you are paying, a few hundred dollars a month. And I didn't even have a rebuttal. I'm like, if you say so. And essentially at this point, his arrogance, like, I think he knew the deal was closed. He's like, yes, I do say so, sir. So it was really a kind of a passive aggressive deal. And then he had me by
stuff.
Yeah, stuff. And I had nothing. Like, and I never felt so, or rarely felt so vulnerable and like taken advantage of. I wanted to hang up the phone just, you know, because of my pride, but I had no choice. I literally had no choice. And it was that night on the verge of tears and heartbreak. I was like, I'll never put myself in this position again.
Wow, that's powerful because it always comes down to, what do they say, desperation or perspiration. And I love you going to that spot because I was at a very similar spot. But Rich, have you always been good with money?
No, I haven't. And I'll say that the podcast has actually helped me become better with money. It's amazing how that works. When you're so entrenched in something and you talk about these types of things, you start realizing things for your own life. And I'd say it's probably just over these past couple of years that I've really started to get a handle on things, start to get systems in place so that I actually know how much I'm saving versus just the let go and hope for the best approach. So much better than I was a couple years ago, but still some ways to go.
Wim, back to you. You know, it's one thing to say, okay, I'm never going to be in this spot again. I had this year where I made no money and I had collection people calling me all the time. And I remember being so angry and the fact that they were doing the same thing to me that they did to you, which was just really talking down to me and treating me like, yep, I was just absolute dirt. And when I realized that financially I kind of was dirt, you know, that changed a lot. But that wasn't a move. What was the first move you made? What was the first piece of going on the attack that you did?
Well, I think, number one, you know, information is power. And I, even as I tell this story, and I've told that story probably half a dozen times, I'll probably tell it two more dozen times as I kind of roll out a number of things. But, like, it still hurts. Like, as I walk through that and I kind of look back and I see, you know, young Wim in his room frustrated on probably my twin mattress, who was probably sitting on the floor at that point. Like, that still hurts me to this day. And this was over a decade ago. The first step I made was the choice. And I had never really done that before. I got frustrated. I kind of joked. And I had been, quote unquote, on a debt plan since I graduated school. And that plan was, oh, yeah, I'll get out of debt in 5 years. And I never sat down and calculated. I never even crunched the math on what that means. It just sounded good. I was like, oh, I'll get out of debt at that time, 27. Oh, I'll get out of debt at 28. And you can continue to do the math. I'm a millennial, and I won't go into what age I actually currently am right now. But I just kept putting it off, and I never sat down and formulated it. Like, I never had a plan. I was on a no plan. So I finally sat down and I started. Now, this is telling of my age, you're wrong side of 30 or 40 as it may be. Like, this was kind of before the age of smartphones. So I had to go out and get a piece of paper, an Excel spreadsheet, run my credit report, which is something I had never done. I didn't even know how to do it. So I went out and got my credit report information. And basically, I collected information. As I said, information is power. And I really sat down and looked at, okay, if I wanted to truly get out of debt, at that time was 5 years, what would that look like? What is the first step? What would that plan even really look like? So I put a plan together. And I joke with people because, you know, people ask me all the time. They're like, oh, you got out of debt. What's, you know, how do you do it? How do you, it's like losing weight. Oh, you lost weight. How do you do it? I'm like, spend less money than you make.
Right.
And come up with a plan. Like, right. It's actually the simplest part is coming up with the plan. And in the inverse, the hardest part is sticking to the plan. And I am no better with money. I wouldn't say that I'm quote unquote good with money now. I just know what it takes, the sacrifices I have to do. And that was really it. I made a choice. And then because I'm stubborn, I talk about this on the show all the time, I was like, I will not stop until I achieve this goal.
I
put that plan in place.
No, it's powerful. You have to be, because Rich, you're going to fall off the wagon, right? And you got to get back on.
Yeah, it's a really big thing. Then I think it happens to everyone. It's the same thing with weight loss. You know, you see people, and I've done this myself. I lose 20 pounds. Great. Oh, man, I look awesome for 2 months. I don't have to wear a T-shirt in the pool. And then a few months after that, it's like, oh, I put back on 10. And it can easily be the same thing when it comes to spending. I've had stretches where I've been super diligent about tracking everything. And I've had stretches where life gets a little bit crazy. And that's usually where it gets the most challenging, where you have a lot of stuff going on in life. And that's when I found that it's really the hardest to maintain that vigor about keeping track of everything that's going on financially and professionally or wherever else.
Rich, when you talk about getting your finances in order and when you talk about recovering from $30,000 in debt, well, I guess, Wim, I'll start with you. What did you do? Did you start just hiding money from yourself using things like direct deposit, or what did you do?
One of the first steps I did was, because I think the simplest solution for most people is, instead of cutting my expenses, I was like, I need to make more money. So there was points where I just picked up another job. At first, I picked up a part-time job, and I put all the money that I, like the part-time check, I basically didn't spend. I put it all towards the debt. And then, as Rich has said, you know, that worked for a while, but then I'm like, you know how many bottles this part-time money could buy? So my debt... I paid it off for like 3 months, but then, you know, I'm 25 or so and everyone's going out and, you know, keeping up with the Joneses and or the P. Diddy's or whatever, you know, person that you're trying to keep up with. And I'm like, well, I was able to buy this many bottles before the debt. And now imagine how many I could buy. So my debt didn't go up. So I got irresponsible again, but it kind of stagnated. So I paid it down. And now that I have this influx of cash, I made some of the same mistakes. The only difference was I wasn't doing it on a credit card. I was just, okay, I'll just make it rain. What's helped me, and I think helps a lot of people that have gone through this journey, is that first victory, like that first taste of success. So I was, you know, finally making some payments, and I can't remember which one I paid off first, but I think it was my school loan. I had a small school loan. It was about $3,000 or something to that effect. Like, once you pay it off, you're like, so it's 25 or, you know, whatever the minimum payment is, $200 back in your pocket. We talk about these small victories and they seem small in scope, but $200 a month, that's, you know, $2,400 a year. Like, those little changes might seem small month to month. That lifestyle inflation of, well, I'll just get cable. Oh, well, I'll just go shopping and I'll just do this and I'll just do that. And those things in the inverse add up just as quickly. Like, you spend $500 here and $600 there. And then over the course of a year, you've spent thousands of dollars taking small bites of that debt elephant, but externally. And so after I got the first taste of success, I started going, you know, I was like an extreme couponer. Now I'm an extreme debt payer. Like, I stopped getting haircuts. I stopped buying new clothes. And people are like, okay, you know, so what? And I'm like, you know, I paid $20 for a haircut every week. And so I was putting $80 back in my pocket a month. And so I put that on debt. I cut cable. That was $200. So that's $2,400. I'm going to start not being able to do this math in my head. Hopefully someone's cracking a calculator out. And I talked about that in the inverse. I downsized my apartment. I moved in with a roommate. I got $700 back. And, you know, I was making all these small incremental changes. And before I knew it, I had thousands of dollars back in my pocket a month. I won't say it's easy. It's still a sacrifice. It took a while. It took me about 3 to 5 years of serious focus to pay this debt off. But when you're putting thousands of dollars back in versus putting it out, it's a lot easier to make those payments down. And we've talked about on the show, even little changes like $10 more above your minimum payment on a $2,000 payment, you'll pay that off in months instead of years. It was like 36 months instead of, and if you look at your credit card statements now because of the law, they show you the 3-year payoff and they show you the minimum payment. And the minimum payment is going to be something insane, like in 54 years, right, your grandchildren will pay your credit card off. And then you look at the 3-year and it's like, you know, if you add $10 to this minimum payment, you'll pay it off in 36 months. It's, I think people get so overwhelmed by the start of the journey, which is the first step, that they're like, well, I'm not even going to join the race.
Right.
And I think once you get out there and you get the taste of that first success, which is why I tell some people, you know, take your smallest balance, even if it's low interest, high interest, whatever it may be. Pay that off, and then you're putting money back in your pocket. You're paying yourself. I kind of just have that, you know, a dollar saved is a dollar earned rule.
Yeah, that's it's funny how you really need, well, you need that, those little tiny wins, and mm-hmm. and I just think that if you get those first couple wins, Rich, you just kind of start rolling, don't you?
Yeah, and that's the way it's been for me. And like, I've started putting, you know, more systems in place. So, like, for example, opening additional bank accounts so I just don't have everything being paid all over the place out of one place, which makes it a little harder for me to track it at the end of the month. And, you know, even something as simple now for me as Digit, you know, which a lot of it, well, it's interesting because I feel like a lot of people know about it, but a lot of people don't know about it. And even using that as a way for me to be able to save money on the side without having to think about it, it's just automatically being done for me. That's something that's creating an additional savings fund to cover $1,000 incident or whatever it may be that I may not have been able to do otherwise. And so as I keep having, you know, I keep looking at the account, seeing that it's going up, seeing that my bank account balance hasn't decreased in the last few days because I've been more conscious about, you know, how I'm spending because I'm getting regular notifications about cash going in and going out. It's actually exciting, like saving money and watching the balance go up and feeling like my net worth is actually going well beyond zero. That, and well beyond could be like $50 for some people.
Right.
But, you know, having that feeling, it's worth it to me. And as I keep having successes, whether it's being able to pay a big chunk of money on a card that I wouldn't have been able to pay before, or seeing that I have 3 payments left on something, that's really rewarding. And that's what's really keeping me going.
Oh my God, I would love to talk to you guys even longer because I want to go into what apps you like and about using your workplace benefits. And there's so much to talk about, but we got to do that again another time. The show is Paychecks and Balances. You guys are wherever people listen to podcasts, aren't you?
Yeah, we're on all the podcatchers. If you're someone who likes to stream from a website, you can go to paychecksandbalances.com. All of our episodes are there. We just put up a new media player. So you can check it out there or wherever else you listen to podcasts, with the exception of SoundCloud. We used to be there, but
we're not on SoundCloud either. But Wim, what are some of the recent topics you guys have talked about on the show?
We talked about the cash diet recently. I think that's actually our most recent episode.
We'll have a link if you're out on your morning walk or in the car to Paychecks and Balances in our show notes at stackybenjamins.com. Rich, Wim, thanks for hanging out, guys.
Yeah, no problem. It was a good time. Looking forward to hopefully doing it again down the road.
Amen.
Appreciate it.
Hey, trivia junkies. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. Joe's mom insisted that we hire a real live professional technician to come out and fix the furnace. But that guy wanted to charge us $18.75, there's a decimal in there, for a service visit. You know how many ice cream sandwiches these guys could buy if they don't pay that exorbitant fee? So instead, I've got YouTube pulled up and, ha, these cat videos are amazing, but I'll get to watching some Fix-It videos. But first, there's this one where the guy, he jumps off the roof onto a trampoline and he goes through it. Classic. But I did promise you all some trivia, so let's get to it. Here's your question. Which bank has circulated the most credit cards in the U.S.? The answer right after this.
OG and I are excited to have two sponsors at Stacking Benjamins that we can send people to who will help any of our listeners get their financial house in order. First of all, let's solve your debt problems by sending you to stackingbenjamins.com/SoFi. That's S-O-F-I. We talked to Dan Macklin about SoFi because they started in student loans, but then quickly moved on from there. We wondered exactly why they started with student loans.
Student loans just seem to be a bigger issue for people. There's over $1 trillion of student loan debt out there. And it really is and continues to be a pretty inefficient market. Lots of people overpaying. But we've quickly moved on from that. So as well as student loans, we're now doing other things, including mortgages and personal loans. But student loans was just a great entry point because so many people were overpaying.
So if you're someone who's overpaying for student loans or for other types of debt, whether it be mortgage or personal loans, head to stackingbenjamins.com/SoFi. And once you've been there, we'll send you to stackingbenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney. Because the thing about Magnify Money that I find really cool is that they do not ask for any personal information before showing you how different financial products rank against each other. And part of that rating system is just how little fine print there is. So we asked Nick Clement, CEO at Magnify Money, to explain more about their rating system and helping you avoid fine print.
Oh, the fine print can get out of control. You'll always see marketing which tells you this is free or we're even going to put money in your pocket if you do business with us. But then when you look underneath the hood, you can find fees on top of fees on top of fees. And some of the worst are in the world of overdrafts where you can be charged $35 per item. And then after 5 days of a negative balance charge, another $35, particularly in that area, you see banks that are worse than payday lenders, although they're not advertised that way.
So for checking accounts, savings accounts, and debt products that you understand, head to stackingbenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney.
Hey everyone, it's Joe's mom's neighbor Doug. There's always that moment in life when you realize you messed up. Maybe you forgot to turn off the TV, you left your doggy bag at the restaurant, or maybe you turned the furnace on full blast and break off the handle. Maybe. No worries, though. We've still avoided the 1875 service visit, and I get to watch just two more fix-it videos about handles. But first, let's fix up your trivia, shall we? Before the break, I asked which bank has the most credit cards in circulation in the U.S.? The answer? It turns out the big bad boy in credit cards is Citigroup with, according to creditcards.com, over a whopping 110 million cards in circulation. That is a lot of plastic. Hey, maybe I could use a little plastic on this thingamajigger and that'll fix this ducty looking thing back over there behind the, well, you know, let's see if there's a video for that. All right, see ya.
That's surprising on Citibank or Citigroup, whatever. I kind of seem a little smaller than Chase these days. But was that the number of credit cards or the amount of?
It's the number of credit cards in circulation.
Pure number of plastic in circulation.
110 million. That's amazing, people.
Is that all?
Imagine if we just had 100.
Well, how many Citibank cards do you have? Your family, you have two, right? You have one and Cheryl has one.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, we have four.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not because we have four different credit cards. It's just, I have one, she has one, I have one, she has one, you know? So.
They have 110 million. Imagine if we had 110 listeners.
We would each have 55 listeners per awesome show host.
55 for you, 55 for me?
Yeah.
Hey, let's fire up the Courtesy Hotline.
Where are we going with that?
I have no idea. Let's fire up the Courtesy Hotline. Why spend time with some boring insurance agent when you...
Me?
...can very quickly... Head to stackingbenjamins.com/courtesy and get insurance quotes from 17 of the biggest and best insurers in the land. stackingbenjamins.com/courtesy. Today on the Courtesy Hotline, our call comes from D Money. Say, hey, D Money.
Hi, guys. I have a question about Roth 403B contributions and withdrawals. I currently have the option at work to designate my 403B contributions as Roth or traditional. Right now, everything's traditional going in, but I think my tax rate is about as low as it's ever going to be right now. So I'm really strongly considering putting half into the Roth designation. My question is about withdrawing Roth and traditional 403B money upon retirement. Do I get to just decide at retirement which is the money I'm pulling out? I know that the custodian of those accounts are keeping track of what is Roth money and what's traditional. And my follow-up question to that would be just to make sure that the option to pull out the 403B money at age 55, if I separate from service at that time, if the Roth 403B contributions and earnings work the same way, that I'll be eligible to pull out that money and that I wouldn't have to wait until age 59 and a half. So I really appreciate your response to this and your information. And I haven't learned anything yet. Thank you.
D-Money. Here's kind of what's happening actually inside the account. You actually will have two accounts within your 403B. So when you separate from service, what many people do is they choose to transfer their money from that employer plan to a self-managed IRA or a Roth IRA, depending. A little bit more diversification options, perhaps, and more fund options and choices and that sort of thing. Let's fast forward and you're 55 years old and you say, okay, I want to retire. I've got some money in my regular 403B and I've got money in my Roth 403B. When you go to do the rollover, when you do the what we would call a trustee-to-trustee transfer, right, when you're going to move money from your 403B to the IRA, you'll actually establish two IRAs. One will be a traditional IRA. One will be your Roth IRA. And then, yes, you will, upon that choice, and even if you left it in the 403B plan, you'll be able to choose where you draw the money from. So, yeah, you'll always be in control of that. As far as the age 55 thing, 59 and a half, the Roth 403B works very similarly to a Roth in that you have to have the account open for at least 5 years, and you have to be 59 and a half to take out the earnings tax-free. But if you separated from service at 55, you would be able to take your principal out tax-free from 55 to 59 and a half, assuming that you left the earnings alone. So it's a great idea. If you're in the lowest tax brackets you think you're going to be in, then like we've said a couple of times, I think, on the show, we kind of like them both.
Right.
So a little action on both sides, you know?
Yes.
Just like Joe likes. A little in both ways.
Thanks for the question, D-Money. If you want to make me throw up in my mouth too, you can head to stackofbenjamins.com/voicemail and leave us a call for the Quota C hotline. Normally we get letters. However, today, instead of the letter segment, it is time. So for those of you that listen to the Friday show, you know that when OG's not here, we play a Friday game. And lately, we have been playing this game, which is a numbers game that our friend Julie...
Wait, you guys play games when I'm not around?
...sent to it. We skip to work when you're not here. Friday's the best day of the week. It is so amazing. But we play a game for me to entertain myself while OG's not here to entertain me. So the latest game Julie sent, and that game was, what's the biggest numbers coincidence in your life? And so I have nine. We've paired the list to nine finalists. And OG, you're going to make this four. All
semi-finalists.
Right? Semi-finalists. Yeah, thank you. You're going to make this four semi-finalists. So let's go, and these are going to be so difficult. So our first semi-finalist is Jeff. Jeff's number coincidence. His wife's birthday is 12/17, and his is May 18th. His wife's uncle's birthday is 12/17, and guess what his wife's birthday is? May 18th. So his wife's birthday is 12/17. His is May 18th. His wife uncle's is 12/17. His wife's birthday is May 18th. Same, but inverted who the man and woman is.
Interesting.
Jeff says, not sure that's a winner, but it's fun nonetheless. It is fun. That's cool. Ian sends us this one. He says,
probably not a winner. He's also right about that.
That's right. Ian says his anniversary is April 22nd. His first daughter was born November 22nd. His son was born October 22nd. And his second daughter was born August 22nd. Every month on the 22nd, he panics that he might have forgotten something. Unfortunately, he says he's right a third of the time. That's fantastic. Good one, Ian. All right.
Interesting.
Julie.
Julie says, hey, Joe and the team, been a fan of Stacking Benjamins for years. Recently got my boyfriend hooked up as well. Here's a wacky coincidence involving binary numbers. You know binary numbers, zeros and ones?
Yes, I'm aware.
The translation of Stacking Benjamins, capital letters included, into binary has 72 zeros and 72 ones. What? It's 01010011011, and you get it. And she actually has it all the way out. Even more coincidental, the total count of zeros and ones combined for all three of your names equals 72 characters. Joe has 11 zeros and 13 ones. OG has 7 zeros and 9 ones. And Doug, why did she include Doug? Why does Doug get included? I have no idea. It has 14 zeros and 18 ones. This may not be a number short for my life, but I know how much you guys love to talk about the rule of 72. Hopefully it's a contender. So Joe, OG, and Doug, 72 zeros and ones. It's not going to be that.
Just in the effort department, that makes the list, I think.
I'm exhausted just reading,
just explaining
your letter.
All right, math nerd.
How about Nola? Nola says she just returned from her nephew's wedding. He and his wife-to-be were 23 when engaged, both born on July 23rd. They got married on July 23rd. There were 10 bridesmaids, 10 groomsmen. So counting them and the priest, that's 23 people in the wedding party. And Nola says, since this was small town in western Nebraska, there were about 23 of us in the audience. That's pretty good. Next, from Rodney. Rodney says, my parents had two sons and two daughters. My sister was born in 57, 7 years and 7 days before me. My other sister was born in 59, of course, 9 years and 9 days before my brother. Rodney says, keep up the good work. Been listening. Says, two guys, your money, and purchase some Amazon items that we mentioned on the show. Fuji camera in 2014. Some books. Thanks, Rodney. Next is Joanna. Joanna says she and Chuck have been together for 6 years. There are 6 years differences in their ages. They've increased their net worth just over sixfold in that time. And they're on their way to an early financial independent life in six more years, which by conservative calculation, we should hit our number. Lots of sixes in that number. I hope that's not 666 right there. That's,
sign of the beast. Yeah, okay. That's fun. Yeah.
Good luck with that, Joanna.
Fun in retirement.
Next up is Chris. Chris says, my mom turned 65 this year. My dad turned 64. If you add their ages together, you get 129, which is the age at which I've calculated I'll be able to retire. That is a numbers coincidence, isn't it? Good one, Chris. Next is John. John says he was born on the 24th, his youngest son on the 25th, oldest son on the 26th. Different years, obviously, but different months too. So the boys in our family are sequential, but the girls in the family are a sum. Youngest daughter on the 14th, oldest daughter on the 15th, wife on the 20th. So boys, 24, 25, 26, girl, 14 plus 15 equals 29. That's pretty cool.
Neat. All right.
Yeah. Thanks for that one, John. Next comes from Mike. Mike says he loves listening to Stacking Benjamins on his way to work in the mornings. Recently moved from Canada to the U.S., and you and OG have done your best not to teach me anything. When his wife and he were dating, they were very surprised to learn their parents have the same garage door code. My parents' code is my father's childhood address. My wife's parents' code was based on the ages of my wife and mother-in-law when they first got an electric garage door opener. We found out we knew it was meant to be because their parents had the exact same garage door code. That's a good. These are incredible. Next comes to us from Taos. Taos says father-in-law died on 666. He was 66 years old. Man, we're doing this again, aren't we? My nephew was born on 999. How about that? 666 and 999. Next one comes to us from Bill. Bill says, I love the podcast. Big fan of OG and you're okay too.
Nice. I like Bill already. He made it to the final.
This is already my least favorite of the entire bunch.
He's already in. I don't even need to know what he says.
Bill says, number one, his brother's birthday is 612. Sister's is 824 and his birthday is 624. His son's social security and his social security have the same first five numbers, but in different order. For example, his social security number would be like 444-55-XXX. His son's is 554-44-YYY. Obviously not a real social security number, but I hope you get the idea. How about that? Same numbers, different sequence. Next comes to us from Chuck. Chuck says, daughter's birthday is 111. her debit card was turned off and her account was frozen, finding out while she was trying to make a purchase. She went into the bank on her own. Yay, Chuck says, independence, to find out what was wrong. They told her her account was set up wrong and they needed her birth date. When she told them her birthday, they said the system default was 111, so the security shut down the account. The fix was to enter a manual note on her account. So her account got shut down because her birthday was 111. He says he thinks it's a winner because it's a cool birthday and it's a financial nexus. How about that? So
yeah.
Next is, it comes to us from Amanda. Amanda says that her husband keeps reminding her she needs to enter the contest is going on. The weird numbers one. So here we go. Her birthday, Amanda's birthday, is April 2nd. Her brother's is July 2nd. The year she turned 27, he turned 24. So that's 4-2-7-2-27-24 or 4-2-7-2-2-7-2-4. She also says, not exactly related to the contest, but there's a few other weird things about birthdays in her family. She was born on her dad's birthday, and her husband was born on his mom's birthday. Mom born the exact same day as Michael Jackson. It's cool enough to share a birthday with your parent, but doesn't stop there. Husband's cousin also shares that birthday. On her side, her dad and she share the birthday with his granddaughter and her niece, my 11th great-grandfather. Yes, really, my 11th great-grandfather. My great-grandfather, my great-uncle, my great-great-aunt, and a cousin. Plus, my stepdad, brother, and best friend have the same birthday, and my sister-in-law's birthday is the day before. I think I got a headache. That's amazing.
It's a lot of hanky-panky going on.
I know. Three more here.
On this the same day.
I know. Three more here. This one's from Andrew. How are you going to narrow this to four? Wife's last four digits of her social security is the same as the zip code for his parents in Australia. They use four-digit addresses. The last four of his social is the last four digits of their home phone number.
Okay.
Next one comes from John. John says his wife was born February 29th, 1960, and his granddaughter was born August 30th, 1999. In 2012, they went on a cruise to celebrate the year they both had their 13th birthday. That one took me a minute, by the way. I didn't get that. Wife was born February 29th, 1960. Yeah. Granddaughter born August 30th, 1999. 2012 went on a cruise to celebrate the fact they were both 13. Wife born on leap year.
Obviously.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't get it at first. I got that.
Not obviously to you, but obvious to every other listener.
I'm a bear of very little brain. And Roxana, friend Roxana from the Green Room, says she was born in 1968, graduated in 1986. So she mixes them up all the time. People look at her funny when she tells them that she graduated in 68. I also was born in 1968. I do that all the time. So
you were born in 68?
Yeah, be quiet. There are the submissions, the ones I narrowed it down to. So, OG, what's the verdict?
This is going to be tough. All right. So here's in no order of importance. You said I got to do four?
Four.
All right. I got to go with Leap Year John.
Yep.
And the cruise ship. So that one's in. It may seem a little self-serving, but there's a lot of work put into that, I think. So I got to go with the podcast binary.
I think that's,
72.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, maybe that was just something she knew off the top of her head and goes, oh, Stag and Benjamin, that's 72-0-0-0-1-0-1-0-0-0-1-0-1-0-1. Like somebody that knows pi to like 400 digits or something.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah, obviously. I'm going to go with bank card 111.
Yeah. Chuck submission.
Who sent that one in?
That was Chuck.
Funny enough, I have some clients that have kids born on 111. So a little something in my... A little mushy for that. All right. So that's three. And then let's do...
It's so hard because these were all such great submissions, weren't they?
Yeah, I've got three left that I liked that I gotta pick one. I like the birthday, John, because my kids are born on the 25th, 23rd, and 26th. And I told my wife we needed somebody on the 24th.
Right.
And she went, you are... bleeping out of your bleeping mind, you mother bleeper. If you think I'm going to bleep and have another bleeping kid any bleeping time soon.
Like most parents, she'll have amnesia in about 6 to 9 months.
3 o'clock this morning when I went, because you keep her down. She's kind of loud.
Yeah, I bet you did.
So I'm partial to that. I like garage code people and Rodney and his birthdays. So I'm going to go with garage door code.
Yeah.
Meant to be.
Man, that's tough.
Garage door code meant to be. So we got John's leap year, bank cards 111, the self-interested podcast binary, and
garage door code meant to be forever. Garage, my work here's finished.
Garage,
go vote.
Garage door code, leap year, binary. And what's the fourth one?
And 111 bank card.
Boy, those are all great. Thanks for playing our game, everybody. And here's what we're going to do. Now for the next 2 weeks, we're going to set up a voting booth. So go vote. Vote one time. StackofBenjamins.com/numbers. That's where we will have a simple ballot. So StackofBenjamins.com/numbers. And vote for which one's your favorite. We'll leave that up for 2 weeks. And then we'll declare who our winner is. That's it, man. That's going to do it for today's show. Thanks to everybody who not only played that game, but people that write us notes. Man, that was fun. Thanks also to Julie for suggesting that. That was fantastic game, Julie. Good stuff. Coming up on Wednesday, man, I'm excited about Wednesday's show. Guess who is coming here Wednesday? Professor William Birdthistle. He's a professor of law at the University of Chicago. He's written a book called Empire of the Fund, and it goes through some of the problems we have saving OG. And part of the problem, as you know, is that very, very experienced, knowledgeable people on Wall Street, and you have somebody who's not given any education trying to save into these funds. They don't know how funds work. They don't know how the game's played. And so he goes through some of the malfeasance that's happened in the past and has some suggestions about how to fix it. Some very interesting suggestions. He's like, you know what? If the government's going to be involved in our saving anyway, let's have them involved in a way that maybe levels the playing field more. So very interesting. Empire of the Fund. Great sense of humor. The guy's pretty funny. Can't wait for you to hear him on Wednesday. So everybody there, and we'll see you over at the Green Room podcast. By the way, we've got some big news coming in about a week.
It's a week away already, huh?
We're just gonna throw that out there. We got some big news coming. So can't wait to share that. But I will just drop that and take off. See everybody on Wednesday back here over on the Green Room podcast tomorrow.
So what did we learn today? Well, first, Bitcoin may be the future, but it's still kind of the Wild West. And debt? Well, once you get serious about it, you can pay it off quickly like Wim did with his $30,000 debt. But most of all, maybe that $18.75 service visit from a pro doesn't sound so bad after all. This show is the property of SB Podcast, LLC. The show is created by Josal Sihai, produced by Richie Rutter Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Special thanks to Rich and Wim of Paychecks and Balances. You'll find the Paychecks and Balances podcast wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Special thanks to the repair technician who came out to try and repair the heating and cooling unit. I showed him the right videos to watch, and he's all like, I got this, dude. And no, you use this end of the wrench, diva. It was an honest mistake. Any pro like he or I could have made, right? I mean, we're both pros. I don't just need to show it every time something breaks around here that I'm actually a pro at fixing stuff.
I really want to get to these movies, but
go do your movies, man. Well, every time, every day that goes by is another day that
the movie gets older.
You're behind on movies.
Yeah, but this is not. This is way better. This comes to us from the Wall Street Journal. When your dinner guest orders
that one.
So recently, before I get to this headline, for people that are new to the show, you talked about your brother who inadvertently. He bought the special steak. You know how the waiter comes up and they just say, hey, and on special today, we've got this. And your brother said, oh, that sounds good. Turns out he bought $125 steak. Yes. You know, the waiter always skips the price on the special. And so your brother was surprised.
Well, we were not at an inexpensive restaurant to begin with. But right. Yeah, I mean, it was at least three times more than everyone else's.
Yeah.
Main course.
I heard a story just as an aside because I was telling that story to a friend of mine yesterday, Jason.
And Jason works for one of these companies where they have an expense account, and took his sales team out to dinner, and he was in Miami, calls the restaurant, and they go, sir, you have to call 6 months in advance for a reservation. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know. Somebody just told me I need to go here. They said, but you're lucky. You can get in today because we just had a cancellation for the same size party, like 8 of them or whatever. So Jason said, great. We'll definitely take it if it's 6 months, because I'm not even going to be here in 6 months. I'm in Texarkana, right? So let's do it.
Here for work. Yeah.
What time? They said 11:30. He said 11:30 at night. And the woman says, sir, this is South Beach. And he said, when they walked in 11:30 OG, the place was just hopping, like people walking in, like it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon. He said,
That's the one thing that, I like South Florida a lot. Well, you know, I like the weather, you know, I like the beaches and all that sort of stuff. And I've got some friends that live down there, but that is the one thing I can't do. But the first time that we were in South Beach to visit our friend, same thing. He says, oh, you guys want to go out to dinner? It's cool. Let's go to this real cool, hip restaurant, you know? And I said, great, what time? And he goes, what time are you thinking? And I'm like, I don't know.
Six. He says,
well, down here, we like to eat dinner like a little later. So I'm like, oh, I guess we go like 7:30 maybe or something. He goes, oh, yeah, no, I mean like 12. I'm like,
12 what?
12. Yeah. So we came, we actually got to the restaurant at 10:30 and they were still setting up.
That's brutal.
And when we left at, you know, one, the jazz band was playing. The guy was walking around with the flute. And, you know, it was like the right out of Ron Burgundy.
So they sit down and the server comes over and suggests that as an appetizer, they get the Tower of Seafood.
Obviously.
With like, you know, shrimp and whatever on it. Like
Neptune
all this
platter. Yeah.
All this stuff. Yeah, whatever this thing is. And Jason says, wow, that sounds great. He says, and he sees like a picture of it, and she's just describing it. It's just huge. And he says, how much is it? And she says, $70. He's like, oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, great. So she brings this thing.
It's 70 a person.
She brings this thing, and it's absolutely huge. And when they sit it down on the table, he realizes it's $70 per person. And yep, he said,
appetizer.
He said, so they finished dinner and he gets the bill and it was $3,000.
Yeah.
And then his boss said to him, his boss, nobody watch it, listening to this is going to be able to see my hand, but I'll describe what's going on. His boss goes, wow, is your shoulder tired? And he goes, what are you talking about? Is your shoulder tired from doing this? Like, yeah. Just getting the
game.
Yeah, getting the game. Yeah. Bring us more. Yeah, your shoulder tired from saying another round. And he goes, oh, yeah. And then his boss said, well, at least you got to meet with the sales team. And Jason said, no, that wasn't the sales team. That's just my group of guys. And his boss goes, no, at least you got to meet with the sales team. He goes, oh, yeah, that's right. The whole sales team was there. He's like, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's bad. All right. So into this this Wall Street Journal story. This is a little piece on etiquette. When your dinner guest orders a $700 bottle of wine, an etiquette guide. Learn how to deal with wine hogs, shameless business associates, and more with these top etiquette tips for onophiles behaving badly. This is by Letty Teague. Says, a high-priced restaurant experience complete with a wine hijacking wasn't a topic I expected to discuss during a routine dental checkup and cleaning last month, but that's exactly what my dentist, David Silverstrom, wanted to talk about when I sat down in his chair. Dr. Silverstrom and a colleague had recently invited a third dentist to dinner, and it quickly turned into a pretty pricey affair. Their guest, a self-declared wine expert, ordered three bottles of Napa Cabernet for a total of over $1,000 and let them pick up the check. Had I ever heard of such a thing, Dr. Silverstrom wanted to know. I'm most certain.
And he said on the Stacking Benjamins podcast, that's OG's right. Brother did this exact same thing with meat.
I know this complete idiot. A few weeks later, some friends told a similar tale. The couple, who preferred to remain nameless, had been invited to spend the weekend with friends who own a beach house. And on the last night, he said, thank you, they took the host to dinner. At the restaurant, the host's 20-something son ordered some very expensive wine, turning my friend's little sojourn into anything but a, quote, free weekend at the beach.
Have you ever done that? Have you ever been to a restaurant where maybe they didn't have the price or you were with somebody? I had a client event a couple of
I don't know, about a year ago, maybe not that long ago, 6 months ago, and I couldn't make it. Like, I had this thing booked, and it was dinner with some great clients, and I couldn't make it. I was not feeling well. I was out of town, and I couldn't pour myself out of the hotel bed.
So you said, just go.
So I called the restaurant, and I said, here's my credit card. My clients are coming. Treat them well. And then I called my client and said, I can't make it. I want you guys to go anyway and enjoy dinner. You know, it's already paid for. Just go. And in the back of my mind, I was thinking, oh, boy. They were great about it, of course.
They were great about it.
But yeah. But this whole article is fantastic. I like the part in there where he says, and I'm going to keep this little saying. I don't know if you read it all, but where he says kind of a get out of jail free card is if somebody orders, you know, a bottle of wine, you let them pick it. You know, and they say, I want the Opus One, or I want the, you know, whatever, right? The $500 bottle of wine. You grab the wine list and go, yeah, that is a great choice. I'm not sure to go with what we're going to order tonight. And they get the sommelier to come over and go, I'm thinking, you know, probably you'll have a better recommendation, and then point at the price range that you're looking for, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not spending $500 a bottle. I'd be happy to spend $100 a bottle.
I'd be happy to spend $32.
Or if you're at Burger King, yeah, you just go, I'm looking for something in the 1995 range, right?
It's funny because Paul Sullivan recommended that. Of course, Paul Sullivan's been a guest on the show. He's a New York Times columnist, author of The Thin Green Line. He's the one that said that. She's quoting Paul.
Yeah, I got to get that book. The Secret Super Money Secrets of Super Wealthy. Sounds great.
Yeah, we should have had Paul on to talk about this. This would have been great. That's funny. Good stuff. All right, OG.
So, OG's brother, if you're listening, the correct etiquette if you find yourself wanting to guzzle down, you know, $500 bottle of wine or
just say
$125 steak is to go, oh my gosh, I'm sorry, I didn't really realize that. Let me pick this one up.